Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
All right, hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast that has more episodes than actual listeners. I'm your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, and joining me on the other end, all sweaty and sinewy, ooh, because he's just done with his morning exercises, is Mr. John Cimino. Hello, John. All right, John, we got a tight ship today. We're going to keep it lean and mean. We're going to keep it 30 minutes. We're already 32 seconds into it. Let's start the ball rolling. As always, you want me to come up with some type of topic that the folks could listen along, as if they're at the comic book store and eavesdropping on our inane conversations, right?
Absolutely. To tell you the truth, at my shop on this Sunday, talking about it, and then there was this other guy that was just kind of looking around, but he wanted to, like, he was just listening. And I said, can I help you? For like 5 minutes already. And I said, can I help you? He goes, oh, no, I'm just listening,
And you should have told him he could listen every week to the Power Cosmic Podcast, because that's basically the same exact thing, you know.
Yeah, it didn't cross my mind, though, Mitch. Sorry.
It is what it is. All right, now, you know, I'm sitting there. I was just doing Terrificon stuff, and I'm trying to get that done. I added a pile of new comic book artists and writers. It's not easy making the world's, well, actually the New England's biggest Comic-Con every day. That's what I do every day, full-time job, putting this sucker together, producing this thing, you know? So there's a lot of new artists and writers up on that list. A lot of people that are from the days of yore, like I just added Larry Hama today, excuse me, folks might not know Larry, was an actor on some episodes of MASH and Saturday Night Live back in the day. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. And what's funny about that is that, you know, he's kind of like, you know, if anyone who's met Larry, I've known Larry for years, that he's very dry, very dry. And so, you know, you figure he's got those acting chops on him and stuff, you know? I mean, and he can make, used to make some people laugh, but sometimes it's hard for people to see. He's a good guy.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was helping the dog.
What were you doing, Mitch? What were you eating?
I was not eating. I had to go move something so the dog, Harley.
Yeah, you know what you were doing? You just took a big bite out of a Hostess fruit pie. You moved out of the speaker. You covered it up. Swallowed it down fast and came back like nothing was going on.
Just like Hulk when he used to eat those fruit pies in the back of the comic book back in the day when Hostess was the king of the snack food. Corn syrup extravaganza. So I'm sorry. Larry Hama is coming to the show. He is, of course, many fans know him for his run on G.I. Joe, the Marvel Comics series, The Greatest American Hero. Plus, he worked in Crazy Magazine. He did Punisher, War Journal, War Zone, one of them.
Yeah, both, I think. But he also did Wolverine, too.
Oh, that's right. He was the big deal on the Wolverine. When Wolverine had his own series. Exactly.
Yeah, in the 80s, he did that for a while. I mean, he's had his hand in a lot of pots, you know, for a long time. He's just been around forever.
Yeah, man. And he's coming to the show. I added a bunch of other ones. You really got to go hunt around the website. Yesterday, I added a woman named Shannon Farnon. She was the voice of Wonder Woman on the Super Friends for 10 years.
Is she the last living one? Is she the last
She's the last, I believe, I think maybe Wendy or Marvin. Those are from the original Super Friends. But I think as far as the superhero actors, I think she's the last one because the guy who did Aquaman, I can't think of his name right now, he passed away. Yeah, she might be the last of the original Super Friends.
But Ted Knight used to do all those narrations. You remember Ted Knight?
Ted Knight from Connecticut. Yeah, yeah, Ted Knight from Connecticut. And Casey Kasem was Robin back then.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Casey Kasem. Well, yeah, he did a bunch of, like, Shaggy.
He was Shaggy, yeah, he was a bunch of stuff.
He was the guy on Josie and the Pussycats, the one with the glasses.
Simon?
Alexander,
yeah, that's it. Hey, so I was coming up with a topic today. I was going to do this one because it's just fun to hear us try to sing. Best superhero theme songs, whether it's in the movies or TV. Have we ever done that before?
No, but question, Mitch, can we do, it has to be the title theme songs, like with the music, or can it be the background sounds too?
No, let's just do the title songs. Let's do the best ones, like The Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music. Number one, right off the top of your head, best theme song ever.
Ever, that we can put this on the Twitter and we can say that terrific game. Okay, absolutely the best for me. Intro with the music of all time, Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure. There is nothing but nothing better than that intro that actually was... It was all those 60s tunes, you know, it had Birdman, Ghost, Space Ghost, Galaxy Trio, The Fantastic Four, Shazam, all in an episode. It was when it was in syndication in the 80s. And so when that came out, just that intro, I think is the greatest comic, cartoon superhero intro of all time. And just throw it out there, Mitchie, I run the Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure Facebook boards that I have, you know, that's very popular, and join that up, and you can talk about our favorite heroes. Unbelievable. That's my number one. Mitchie?
Wait a minute. I just got to go back. Is that the show that had the Herculoids and all those other shows on?
Yes. Okay,
Birdman. Space Ghost was on there, too?
Yeah, but you got to remember, those in the 60s, started in 66 with Space Ghost, those shows used to be just on individually. During the 60s. Then in like 68, when superheroes kind of went out, those cartoons went away. But in about 10 years later, they brought it back in but it was all in one show. So it was like every day or every week, or it kind of depended on your geographical location, you would get like episodes. But it would start with the Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure, like opening. It is just unbelievable, and it had all those cartoons in one, so you didn't know what you were going to get, but that was the greatest cartoon intro of all time.
And it also didn't it have like the sound effects in the thing, like all that noise,
and just the narration.
Was there narration on that opening theme?
From the fun to like, I want people to, I usually put it up, but you can go on YouTube and...
All right, well, what was the narrative? What was the lyrics?
Oh, you want me to recite them, the whole thing? Why don't you do this?
All right, well, you do that. I'm going to look it up. The Hanna-Barbera...
Just go on YouTube. It is the greatest cartoon intro...
It called? Adventure Show?
No, put in Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure intro. You'll see.
Well, keep talking about it. But do you know what the words are?
Yeah, but I don't want to spoil it. And if you love the fantastic, just the way
I'm doing it. The
problems, you never saw it.
Maybe? I might have, dude. It's been a while. You got to understand that we start off the show every week with it's on now, but unfortunately you can't hear it because I have mic plugged in.
But I want you to.
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now.
You go for 2 minutes and you go listen to the whole
thing. Okay, if I do this, you're going to not hear you for a second. So I'm going to hold on with the mic. Ready? We're going to do this.
Of all time.
All right. I had to unplug the microphone to go listen to that because when I have the mic plugged into my computer to record the harmonious sounds, it blocks out the speaker. So, yes.
Did you listen to the whole thing?
I did. I knew exactly. I should almost get another monitor here next time. So we could go, you know what, here, talk to the people for a second. I'm going to go get another computer. Just talk. Talk about the Rain and Flea Market. What's the latest thing you got in there to sell? What junk did you beat up a dead grandmother to take?
Oh, okay. So Mitch is off there. First, see, this is how we do it on the Power Cosmic podcast. But I'll tell you. When we're talking about theme songs, I'm going to throw a couple others. There's many great theme songs on cartoons. But the reason I'm going on and on about Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventures, for those who want to know, if they look into John Cimino's brain, like if they literally have me like on a couch with some sort of, you know, some probe or some that can see into my mind, you will see the Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure theme song. Now, they might not all be my favorite heroes, but just the way they put them all together with the music and the sounds and the narration, it is like nothing I've ever seen before. And when I was a little kid, I would always listen to it. And one more quick thing on how obsessed I am with that intro. When my daughter was born, and the first day that she came home into our house, I had on cassette at that time the intro, which I paid $40 for it a few years earlier to get that intro. I got ripped off, but I didn't care. I never saw it before. I couldn't hear it.
I'm back. I'm back. Here it is.
And I put it right in front of that, and I played the whole intro.
Hey, shut up. I'm talking to the people.
Look at Mitch is talking to the people.
Exotic lands and fantastic flights of fancy. Jungle planets and mysterious invaders. To prehistoric times and super forces. To modern winged Avengers. Giant, terrifying creatures against primitive power. In space, land, sea, and air, it's a variety of stars. Mighty, musical, athletic, extraordinary. From fantastic to the fantastic. Where amazing weapons, men and...
God, how long is this thing?
Battle against the forces of evil everywhere. And now it's takeoff time for the gathering of the greatest, Hanna-Barbera's World of Super Adventure.
Jesus God, man.
How good when he says from the fantastic to the fantastic, and it turns into the thing, and then you see the Human Torch blaze into fire.
That was very long. I mean, I like the ones that actually told the story, like what you're about to watch. If you never saw an episode, but you sat down for the first time and you got to watch it, you would know what's going on.
Wait, hold on. You can't tell me you, with the bowl, you especially with your big bowl of cereal. You see, you were a little older at that time, but you
turned out. I was, what, 1968? I was like two.
No, but that didn't come out, that like that intro didn't come out till the 70s, later into like almost the 80s.
Yeah, well, all right. I think it's, you know what? Did they ever have an episode where all of them teamed up, like an Avengers?
No, you know what? I'm wrong. The Herculoids appeared in the galaxy, the Herculoids, the Galaxy Trio, and Birdman and the Space Ghost. They all appeared in it was a series of episodes. But then a few years later, Space Stars came out. I don't know if you remember Space Stars. Do you remember that?
No.
Which was an updated version in the 80s of Space Ghosts. You don't remember the Space Ghosts, the Herculoids. Who else was there? Space Mutts. Do you remember them? Yeah, you don't remember these things, right?
I don't know. I'm all confused.
But they made... Wait. But they made, like... They made it in the 80s, and they were all together in that. But,
no, I don't remember that. No, I'm just saying, it looks... A lot... Here's the problem I have with the Hanna-Barbera shows. They always seem like they could be so much cooler, but you gotta meet... At the time they were written, in the late 60s, that was probably the coolest thing going, but I was looking at it with older eyes, more cynical eyes, and I was like,
"No, of course."
They always like fell flat, you know. It always seemed like the same show, like
the same animation.
Oh God, you know what you want? I gotta admit, people are gonna get mad at me. You know what's cartoon that was supposed to be a legend from that time period that people love and I can't stand and never liked it ever? Johnny Quest.
Oh, you're bad. Okay, but wait.
I hate Johnny. Haji, the whole group. I can't stand it. Oh, that was a dog, right? What?
I'm going to agree with you up to a point. When I was a kid, I didn't like Johnny Quest because I was so pro-superheroes. But about 10 years ago when I got into it, and then you watched those original, like, 20 cartoons or 13 cartoons, however many they were, that is one of the best cartoons ever.
All right. Here's my favorite of all time. Ready?
Go ahead, Mitch.
You can't beat that. You gotta admit, that's one of the best ever. Ever.
Oh, of course, and the most classic. Oh, Mitch, segue that into an advertisement for Terrifica.
Oh, you know, and here's the sad thing. Well, I can tell you now, and I'll put it out there because you know somebody else will end up getting the guy for the show. As we found out that most people, other con promoters, listen to Terrific Con's podcast, The Power Cosmic, and get ideas. We were trying to get Jack Urbant, the guy who wrote the Marvel superhero theme, the Mighty Marvel Marching Society. It was all done. It was going to happen. I called him up. The man called me. We had phone conversations. The problem is,
Let me cut you off. We got to remind the people that, remember, we were trying to get him the year before, too.
Yeah, I know. So it's been 2 years in the making. So I talked to Jack. He called me up. I think he's like 88 years old. He called me at like 10 o'clock at night, which was bizarre. I'm like, what the hell? So I talked to him to midnight. And the problem with it is, there's a piano over at the Mohegan Sun. And where our old convention center, it used to be in the lobby. I wanted Jack, and he's a piano player and a you know, lyricist and all that, composer. I wanted him to play those songs, and he was going to. But now that we're in the Expo Center, I did not know, and these are the things you find out, to move a piano is not that easy. And every time it gets moved, it has to be retuned. So we were going to have to move it from the hotel lobby to the Expo Center, retune it, then pack it up, ship it back, and Mohegan was like, yeah, who's paying for all this retuning and moving a piano? It's not that easy. And then if you look at renting a piano, it's an arm and a leg too. So unfortunately, I love him. He was a great guy to talk to on the phone. I even had his graphic all set to put up on the website, but unfortunately, we will not be getting him this year.
No.
Unless you can put a piano on your back and just go around. But he did some great theme songs. Am I not right, John?
Oh, some of the greatest theme songs. And if anybody out there, once we start telling you his theme songs, you remember them. He acts and looks and talks exactly like those theme songs.
He looks like a Jack Kirby character come to life.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Let's throw, go ahead, Mitch.
No, go here. I'm looking up some of his shows right now, as you say. I'm trying to fill some time here. All right, here we go. This is it. This is some of Jack's work. Ready? Let me turn this up.
Duck Bruce Banner, melted by gamma rays, turned into the Hulk.
Ain't he on glamour rays?
Wrecking the town with the power of a bull.
Ain't no monster clown who is as lovable
as ever-loving Hulk.
Well, that's the thing. He did all those Marvel supers, the Captain America one, the Hulk one. The thing that he told me is he had no idea what Marvel Comics were, and he met Stan over at Columbus Circle. This is from the man's own story. I should have recorded it and had him on. And he said they brought him a stack of comic books. He goes, okay, give me these books. Give me a couple days, and I'll have your songs. And he goes home, and he comes back, and I think 2 or 3 days later with Captain America, Thor, Namor, Hulk, what was the other one on that show?
Iron Man,
all those songs, and he captures the essence of the whole character in a couple, you know, a couple lines and lyrics and music, and it's unbelievable. Here's a good one. Here's one of my favorites here. You all know this one here. Ready?
All those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. And the blue
He apparently there's something in that song that Jack did that I can't. It's something about the. It's a musical thing, like, you know, like one, two, one, two. The whole meter. That there's a bunch of lyrics in there. That,
oh, is that what he said? Is that what he?
Yeah,
said?
Yeah, he was the only person to pull that off. I can't think
he
what it is.
He also did the intro of the Marvel Super.
Oh yeah, March Along, March Along.
Yeah, yeah. Can you find that one, Mitch?
I will find that one as we speak.
Our high tech.
Well, here's I got it. There's. It's not really a superhero, but there's one song as a kid, a cartoon song. That everybody knows, and that it's a classic here. You know which one I'm thinking of?
Go ahead, Mitch. Put it on.
Well, I don't have it yet. I'm getting it up there, but no, not that one. Here it is. Ready? It's coming up right. Not Spidey. This one.
Dooby-dooby-doo, where are you? We got some work to do now.
There you go, Scooby-Doo. That's...
He wrote that, huh?
I didn't know. No, he didn't write that. I just put it on because it's one of my favorites. If he wrote that, the man is a genius. No, I think Scooby-Doo's got one of the best songs, and it's written with that Hermits type of sound, like a Monkees type of theme back in the day.
Because yeah, that was 1969, 1970 is when Scooby-Doo came out.
Yeah, man, that was a good one. Oh! We're all over the place as I'm trying to find that other one.
Oh, we're always over.
Oh, the ADD on this show. We should get Ridlin to be a sponsor on this show because they would have a six pack of it going on here. But no, those are, I just like those shows. But we were supposed to just stick with superhero themes. You know, I can't think of any more.
Another theme that I loved, see, intro with the music and the narration. I got to go with Thundar the Barbarian. I mean, how can you
Well,
not
that's not real. Here's a good one. This
so you're
was
looking
good.
To more, like, the tunes, like the themes.
I
like
know.
Who is the superhero? Sarge? No.
You know which one this is?
No.
Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be. Hong Kong Pooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Pooey, quicker than the human eye. He's got style, a groovy style, and a mob that just won't stop. When the going gets rough, he's super tough with a Hong Kong Pooey chop. Hong Kong Pooey, number one super guy.
Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy. You never heard that?
Of course I did. A good song is like, after you watched cartoons on Saturday morning, you went outside to play with your friends, you were still humming those stupid little tunes, you know? Like you would always have that. And I remember singing Hong Kong Phooey a lot.
Did you? Did you ever do Stop the Pigeon? You know who Stop the Pigeon?
No, I don't know that one.
Oh my God, that's Dastardly Dylan. That's your boy. You do know the Wacky Racers were part of another show, right?
Yeah, yeah. But see, you have to understand, when I was a kid, I was pro-superhero. I didn't like to watch any of the I appreciate that stuff today, but back then, I didn't grow up with it. If it wasn't superheroes, I didn't care.
Well, the thing is, I remember Dastardly Dylan and Muttley being the stars of... what do you call it? The Wacky Racers was one, but then they had that other show where they were pilots in World War One, and they were trying to stop a passenger pigeon. Or not, I'm sorry, not a passenger, a messenger pigeon. The little things, you know, the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Good things. The only animal or kid thing that I watched when I was a kid that I still adored was obviously Peanuts.
Hey, what was the other one? So you wanted the Marvel Marching Society. Again, though, what about, I don't know, I threw it out there. I don't know where we were going today, but the Batman cartoon shows, they didn't really have good theme songs, did they? I'm sorry, take that back. The animated Batman, the one from the 90s, had a terrific theme song. That was Danny Elfman.
Based off Tim Burton's thing. But I'll tell you this. When I was a kid watching those Batman, the Adam West Batman stuff on syndication, I loved that intro. I wish that intro, there was a cartoon based on that intro. Oh, my God. When I was a kid, I was hoping for that.
I always thought that was odd that artwork looked a lot. They tell you it's Bob Kane, but it's not. It's like the Bill Finger.
Dick Sprang.
That's it. Yeah. That artwork was cool. I was like, why can't we have a cartoon that looked like that, you know?
Oh, that was so good when they start running at you and they're punching every. And I was like, oh, my God, I wish this was the show.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it was not the show. How about the 90s? 90s, Spider-Man, what was it, Joe Satriani? Is that the one that did the 90s thing?
This is when I kind of got out of stuff. I didn't get to the Batman animated series till years after because I hated the 90s because it had too much
Spider-Man, radioactive Spider-Man. It was all synthetic music shit.
I couldn't stand that. At least the animated series had the orchestra, but I couldn't stand all that. Like the guitar. So I hated it.
Did anyone really ever like that music?
Not me.
No, I mean, you know, you of.
It did do well, but it lacks charm. It's not it, like
you of legendary fame and fortune of Grimlock. You're a musician. You didn't care for that. I thought you would like that synthetic thrash sound.
No, we were just two guitars, a bass, a throat vocals, and drums, double bass.
How about this one? That was the X-Men theme. I gotta tell you, if you will go back and watch that X-Men cartoon series, that's one of the best cartoon series ever.
No, you asked me about the intro, hated it. Did I like the cartoon? Yes, I had, yeah.
That you didn't like the music?
I couldn't stand it.
Actually, if you go to watch the X-Men movies, there's a couple bars or a couple notes of that cartoon in the theme song. Did you know that?
Oh, it is.
And the big screen X-Men movies with Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman.
I did not know that.
But that's the music right there. It goes. You'll hear it like when they show that big metal door slamming with the X logo with Cerebro. Yeah. And it always ends with that music. And if you listen to the cartoon, it's the same beats. See? See, we teach you here on the Power Cosmic. You learn.
Mitch, when did Jack Kirby die? 1992?
No, wasn't 2002?
No, 92.
No, it was 20 years ago. Let me look it up on the computer here.
I think it was 92 or 94.
It might have. It was something with a 2 in it. Death. You might be right. I have a weird problem with time. That's another story.
Time and space. Because you have the time gem, Mitch.
Honestly, it's like I remember the 80s. I remember the 90s. The 2000s, the whole decade of the 2000s, it's like a blur. I don't know what happened.
I
think it's because I had kids then. I was working full time, and you don't have a life. You just do everything for the kids, and then next thing you know, they're all grown up, and you go, where have I been for 20 years?
Yeah, now it's like I got nothing to do now.
Exactly. What the hell? I typed in Jack Kirby's death. I was too busy looking at the YouTube. Well, what about it, though? What about his death?
How it ties in with the X-Men cartoon, I was watching the cartoon, and it said at the end, after the credits, it said it was dedicated to Jack Kirby because he died, and they set his dates on.
Well, then
that.
It must have been in the 90s then.
Yeah, because...
Yes, I'm sorry. Oh, a weird thing. He died February 6th, my father's birthday, and he died in 1994, Jack Kirby did.
You okay, were right. Because I remember when the cartoon ended, it said it on there, and I was like, oh my God, Jack Kirby died. Like,
and you were like, what does that mean?
That's why that cartoon will always be kind of in my head, is because that's when I found out Kirby died. And you remember, there was no internet and all that stuff back then.
Back then, we just had guys that walked around the street and hollered a lot.
You may get it in a newspaper, a little clipping, or you might get it...
No, like, newspapers were the big deal, man. I'm sorry. There was nothing better than a newspaper back in the day. My dad would get, like, the New York Daily News. Unbelievable. They had the best... I would judge a newspaper by its comic section, you know? Like, who had the best comic strips?
Of course. I couldn't stand the Boston Globe.
Oh, no. They had, like, nothing.
Garfield first. I hated Garfield.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you. Here, like you said, you mentioned Peanuts before. That was something you'd fall in love with. I remember finding, like, what? You can get a new comic strip every day? And the thing of it is, because, you know, that's how people told the news. You didn't have time to watch TV, and the news back then was only on at, like, 6 o'clock and 11, and you either saw it or you didn't. There wasn't no CNN or anything like that. So my dad would get the newspaper, and there was, like, the New Haven Register, the Journal Courier, or the New York Daily News. Man, oh, man. They had the Spider-Man strip. I used to cut them out of the newspaper and save them.
Yeah, the Spider-Man strip. That was.
Oh, I had boxes of them, and I would try to put them in order, and it would drive you nuts if you missed a day. You know where this OCD comes from. We were doing it. We didn't even know we were OCD. It's like, I got to get the newspaper, and then you would arrange them all by the day they came out, and it was John Romita art, and Stan Lee was writing, but now we know it was really...
Oh, yeah, the Romita art. That was so good.
And we all know it wasn't really Stan Lee writing them, was it? It was really Roy Thomas?
Well, yeah, it was... Yeah,
well, no, Stan. Was he always doing them from day one, or was Stan doing them...
No. Stan started, obviously, but no, Roy came in a little bit later, and he's been doing it with them ever since, or all of them. It's just a name on
it. I know, and it says Stanley. No, those are gorgeous. The artwork back, because back then comic strips were still, you know, looked upon as a big deal.
You were a little older than me, so you knew how the newspaper strips worked, because I always thought that it came out on Sunday. So I would, because you notice how
they would do a recap on Sunday of what happened.
But it would be in color, and the other ones would be black and white.
Yeah.
I never knew there were other ones during the week. I would just get every Sunday, and for some reason, I just thought that's how they were, but they never connected. I didn't know that they were going on all week long.
Oh, no. That was the best thing. And what happens is the structure of the comic strip was that they would the serialized ones, they would tell the story, but you only had three panels or two panels to tell it. And then on Saturday or Sunday, you'd have to do a little recap of what happened that week for the people that didn't read it. So it's actually a very strange way to tell stories that might just take a regular comic book, one issue. It would be drawn out for like 6 to 8 weeks in a comic strip.
But, Mitch, I have a question for you. You're a little older than me.
Yeah, we know that.
No. But did you ever see the Hulk strips in the paper?
No, I never saw those. And that's what drove me nuts. I found out there was Hulk comic strips. I'm like, what? There's a Superman comic strip. We didn't get those.
Did you ever see any of the Batman ones, too?
No, I didn't even know they still made those. I knew they were in the 40s and 50s. My dad would tell me. But the only comics book ones we would get were Spider-Man. We had Star Wars for a while. I was cutting those out of the paper. I love the artwork on those. And really, the only other thing was probably Dick Tracy was kind of comic booky. That's it. There was not even the New York papers, which is weird. Now that I think about it, I would get the New York papers. They did not have Spider-Man. I mean, they did not have Superman or Batman in the New York Daily News or the New York Post, for that matter.
Yeah, I never
saw. I don't know where they ran. Who the hell actually read those things, man?
Well, that's how those artists got paid, you know, by all the newspapers that would pick it up. Yeah. So that's how, because they would all pay a price to get that in their paper. So the mass, more, that's why Peanuts, like Schultz.
The syndication. Yeah, the syndicate. Yeah. King's Feature Syndicate.
Right, yes. Exactly. But that's how you made the money. So the Hulk just probably wasn't in this area. Because I never
saw it. Well, I happen to live in the land of comic strips here in Connecticut, Fairfield County, New Haven County. New Haven, Al Capp, the man who created Little Abner and Andy Capp, all that, he was from New Haven. He was there. And right down here where I live now, we had Mort Walker, who just passed away, Beetle Bailey, and High and Lois. Did you know that Lois from High and Lois is Beetle Bailey's sister?
No, I never knew
that. Yeah, they were related. Beetle Bailey started off as a college student, like a little hipster dude, and the strip wasn't going anywhere. And then they made him get drafted and put him in the Army, and that's when it became very popular. But he is Lois's brother from High and Lois. They're connected.
I never knew Beetle Bailey was a comic strip because I saw the cartoon first when I was a kid.
No. We used to read that. Sergeant Snorkel and his little dog and the whole group, Mrs. Buxley. That was a good one. And then there was Hagar the Horrible, done by Dick Brown, who also lived down here in Westport, who was
friends. The Viking guy, right? The Viking?
Yeah. Hagar the Horrible. He was friends with Mort Walker, and Dick Brown were friends. And the whole group of artists lived down here. Stan Drake.
Yeah.
They all lived in Westport and Fairfield, and all, there were tons of them, because what it was is it was just a quick hour train ride into New York City, less than an hour. And they would work in Connecticut because Connecticut at the time didn't have any sales tax or state tax, income tax. So you would work in New York, and then you would get, you know, you come to the country. You'd live in Connecticut. You know, you'd have the pipe and the sweater on and, you know, the martini in the afternoon. You'd be all gassed up, and it looked like something from the 50s. Father Knows Best TV shows, but that's the way it was. My friend and neighbor over here, Mike Riley, his dad was Don Riley, and he was the most proficient cartoonist for the New Yorker magazine. He has more cartoons in it than any other guy. That was his job. He would just stay home and draw comics, kind of like I do, but I do this. My first job, The Secret Origins of Mitchie Halleck, was to work for a guy named Roy Doty. And Roy Doty was a comic book, a comic strip artist and writer. He did Laughing, which was a TV show back in the day.
I remember. Yeah. That was Goldie Hawn?
Yeah, Goldie Hawn. So Laughing, he did that as a strip, and he also did some other ones. I was supposed to be his apprentice. I went to his house on a Sunday. I brought my portfolio, and I have done my own comic strips. You can read the comic strips, The Adventures of Mitch and Merle, Neverland. I had about five different comic strips at the school newspaper. I would get fired every semester, and I'd have to come back with a new one because they didn't like them. They were too in jokes. They were too political, too cerebral. They didn't like them. You know what they did like? The hacks, the editor. He liked the strip I used to do called Great Moments in Couch Potato History. He thought that was fantastic.
That was almost like an autobiography, man.
Yeah, it was, because back in the 80s, couch potato was like a new word because people would sit there and watch cable TV.
That was popular. Remember they made couch
potato? I had a couch potato toy, a little pillow. So I would draw these, like, on this day in 1984, John Q. Spud sat in front of the TV and watched the entire Star Trek marathon without getting up once. And it would show a potato with Mr. Spock ears, and it would look like flies around him, like he was just sitting on the couch crapping his pants and pissing himself as he watched the Star Trek marathon. At the time, it was funny. But now, looking back, it probably doesn't make sense. It doesn't translate. It doesn't age well. So anyway, I go to Roy Doty's house, and I go in there with my portfolio. Roy's upstairs. It's Sunday morning. I don't know if he was sleeping it off or what. But his daughter's downstairs reading my portfolio, laughing her head off. And the dad goes, "What's this all about?" And she goes, "Oh, this guy, Dad, you got to hire him. He's hysterical. I'm reading his comic strips." And mine were like superhero adventure, like Bill and Ted type of things. And he goes, he just looks at it. Doesn't even read the stories. Looks at him, goes, "You can't draw hands." I go, "What?" He goes, "The hand. You don't know how to draw hands well." I go, "Well, what the hell? I'm only 19. Did you know how to know everything when you first started?" That's the problem with Mitchie and the Mitch, if you don't know. I always have to have a comeback. I can't just let it slide. I always have to have a fight. I'm very belligerent that way. It's one of my faults. But unlike many of you out there listening to the show, I know my personal problems. So anyway, I go, "Yeah, did you think you knew how to do everything when you first started?" And then he thinks I had an attitude. He was like, "Go home, practice drawing hands for 6 months, and then come back and see me." I go, listen here, Daddy-O, I got to graduate come May and get out into the real world. I can't come back in 6 months. You either want me or you don't want me. That's the way the Mitchie works. And he goes, I don't want you. I'm like, what? So I left Roy Doty's house. I was so upset. Couldn't get a job there. I had to go back to my advisor at school. He goes, did you get the internship? I go, this is an unpaid. I got fired. I couldn't get hired for an unpaid job. I wasn't getting paid to drive to this guy's house and clean his coffee machine and wipe up all his ink pads. It was a free job. I couldn't get hired. And I ended up working for AT&T doing ads for their, you know, when you get your phone bill, I would be the guy that would make these ads and these newspaper ads. And I remember they were sponsoring the Wizard of Oz play, The Wiz, and they wanted me to do the poster. Oh, I was in seventh heaven, man. I ran home and found my Marvel DC Treasury Edition team up where they made The Wizard of Oz, and I studied it. I drew this great poster, and I came in, and they go, oh, it's only going to be black and white. I'm like, what? And they were like, oh, you know how to draw? Why don't you go work in a comic strip? Why are you doing this crappy catalog work? I don't know. So if it wasn't for Roy Doty, I could have been something else. Then I got hired at Marvel Comics. You know that. I turned that job down. I told you that, right?
Yeah.
But they only were going to pay me $23,000 a year. And I was going to be one of Romita's Raiders, which was like a little bullpen of people that he'd have that would fix books up. And I was making $40,000 a year in Brantford as an art director at 24 years old, maybe 25. And I said, nah, kiss my ass. I ain't doing this. I ain't working for no 23. I'm the Mitch. But I have nice letters, nice offer letter. But anyway, how did we go from Marvel theme songs to my brilliant career?
Oh, you back? You remember you were talking about Andy Capp?
Yeah, him and his hot fries.
Yeah, did you ever eat those? Those were pretty good.
I not only ate those, my friend and I went to a ballpark game and got in a fight, and he took a bag of hot fries, crushed it up, and poured it on my head.
Did you have white hair back then, too?
No, I had dark brown hair. At that time, it was neon orange with crumbs in it. So.
Yeah, those were pretty good. They were hot fries. They were pretty good. But I remember buying them because I was like, this is that Andy Capp, was he a womanizer? Like a drunken womanizer?
Back then, they didn't call them that. That's in the Me Too words nowadays. Back then, it was just that dirty old man. That's all we would call him. Like,
but he loved, but his wife was that blondie chick, though, right? The one with the blonde hair.
No, blondie, you're thinking of Little Abner's girlfriend was Daisy May. It was like running around half naked with the short shorts on.
Okay, but.
Oh, you mean in the comic strip? Oh, yeah. Oh, in the comic strip. The character of Andy Capp would go to the bar and drink all day with that little Scottish, you know, cab driver hat and stuff.
He had the cigar.
And he had the cigar. And the wife was, very good looking, I believe, at home.
Yeah.
But he couldn't stand being with her. That was the whole point.
And then there was Dennis the Menace was horrible.
Oh, Dennis, Hal Ketchum. Yeah, the only reason why I like Dennis the Menace is his last name is Mitchell. I always thought that was cool. He had my first name as his last name.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Dennis Mitchell. There was a TV show, too.
No, I remember that.
Little Joey and all that stuff. What other comic strips were there I used to read? Never read Flash Gordon. I did read the Buck Rogers thing. My dad got me this giant book. I still have it downstairs. It was a big book. It was a collected works of Buck Rogers cartoon strips from the 30s and the 40s. Oh, my God. I used to study that book. The artwork was insane on that thing. It was kind of like an Al Williamson work. I think that's why I like the Star Wars adaptations when he did it in the Star Wars comic strip. He had a very cool way of drawing, kind of like a Will Eisner or Wally Wood.
Don't forget what He-Man was kind of loosely based on. Was a Prince
was He-Man ever a comic strip?
Yeah, it was. It was, but prior to that, though, he was kind of based loosely off Prince Valiant. I mean, how big?
Yeah,
was that?
No, that's why he had that haircut, right?
Yeah, but who was that artist? Milton Cantliff? What was his
name? Oh, no, Milt Caniff? That was Terry and the Pirates.
Okay, yeah, Terry and the Pirates. Who did
Ordway has original art of that hanging up in his house. That is done by, Prince Valiant was done by, oh, you're killing me here. They all lived in Connecticut. He was Hal Foster.
Yeah, Hal, yes, Foster. He was a huge influence on people.
If you ever saw how big those originals are, that's why there's so much detail in them. You're like, kids are stupid. They read a comic book and a comic strip. They think it's drawn that size. I mean, Jack Kirby worked on pages. If you ever see those IDW great books, the artist editions, the big ones, they were massive, man, you know? They were just humongous. That's how they could put all that detail in it. It wasn't like they were drawing an 8.5 by 11 thing.
Yeah, I know. Strip.
But that's neither here nor there. I could actually tie this all together, talking about music and superheroes, with this next topic in our ADD Spiral Out of Control podcast. You know what it is? You know what I picked up last week, number one?
What?
Think music and comics and what it comes to your mind.
Music and Power Records presents.
No, the Dazzler. The Dazzler's back, my man. I picked up issue one last week.
Oh, at the comic store?
Allison Blair never wanted to be a hero, a mutant with the ability to turn sound into high-powered light energy. She chose to become the mega pop star Dazzler. But no matter what.
That sounds like a pity buy. Like you bought it because it was just there.
You know what? I don't even know why the hell I bought it.
No, I'll tell you why. No.
I'll tell you why I bought it.
Even if you don't know, because you were reading X-Men when you were a kid and at that Dark Phoenix saga thing, and you remembered that the Dazzler was in there, so you have some affinity that you think that, like, you have a connection with her, so I have to pick up the Dazzler.
Sure. No, the reason why I bought it is because Bill Sienkiewicz, did this variant cover for it. I literally only bought it for the cover. And one would say, why don't you just go home and download it for free?
Exactly.
And save yourself $2.99. But I'll never buy issue two, that's for sure. It was a one-shot, so I don't have to worry about it. It says, The Dazzler Will Return, an Astonishing X-Men number 14, on sale August 1st.
She was
a lame character, okay? Remember she had roller skates? She was going to be in a movie. Did you ever read the only graphic novel I did not get back?
Yes, I do remember
The Dazzler. What?
Wasn't it in the 80s?
The Dazzler graphic novel, artwork by Bill Sienkiewicz, I think. And it was written by Jim Shooter. Right?
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I never bought it, never read it.
Anyway, I picked that up last week. I also picked up, I'm going to read the opening page for this, and I want you to tell me what this book is.
Okay.
It's a quote from the famous philosopher, psychology guy, Carl Jung. The quote is, "Man is, on the whole, less good than he imagines himself or wants to be."
I think that would probably be the Hulk.
Yes! That is the very first page of the brand new Immortal Hulk.
Now, did you read that already?
Yes, I did. Why?
Now,
legacy number 718, by the way.
Well, let me ask you a question.
What?
When the Hulk confronts that guy and he gives him the pep talk about the stupid gun stuff, that was too SJW for me, and I looked and I said, this is atrocious.
Let me explain something. When I first saw that term SJW coming up on the internet, I actually thought it was a dating service thing and it meant single Jewish woman. I'm from the old school. I was like, what are all these single Jewish women have to do with stuff? Why is everyone going off on this? Well, how is this anti-Semitic? What is happening here? I had no idea what a social justice warrior is, nor whatever. Anyway, so you're saying this whole gun thing with the Hulk about.
Let me ask you this.
What?
Hell, would the Hulk be telling this? If it was Bruce Banner, yeah, I could get it. But he's the Hulk scared, and he's telling him the dangers of a gun. It was propaganda. If you cannot see, that's not the Hulk. I'm sorry. If it was Bruce Banner saying that to the freaking guy, okay. But it was the Hulk.
Well, isn't Banner now, like, controlling him? It's like, he's become Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde more than ever before.
Even so, it was just
I'm going to tell you, proportion-wise, they drew him too damn big.
Well, that's what I mean. They try to make him all imposing. He's supposed to be scary, and he's talking about this. Oh, it was like such a...
All right. Besides your problem here with the Hulk being a moral type of dude.
And I think the art sucks.
All right, who does? Is this guy coming to my show? Joe Bennett. No, I do not want him at this. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just saying... There's a shot here, and the Hulk's talking to this guy with a gun. The Hulk's hands are literally as big as this kid's torso. Like, it's insane. The Hulk would have to be about 20 feet tall. The Hulk is not. How big is the Hulk in your mind?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? The old Jack Kirby book, he was probably like 7 feet tall, maybe.
Right. But see, now he's a shape shifter. Like he's always different with every incarnation. So he can be 10 feet tall. He can be 8 feet tall. He can be 7. We don't know. So this is a new incarnation, and now they're trying to explain, which I do like. Don't get me wrong. I do like the direction where they're going. Is like the Hulk cannot be killed now. They have him kind of like Solomon Grundy. And if you go through his history, he has died and he's come back in some strange manner. And they're kind of tying that all together. And they're making that's why they call it the Immortal Hulk. So the Hulk is kind of like Solomon Grundy now. He cannot die.
You mean the guy that looks like me that's coming to my show?
Yeah. So I don't know.
All right. Well,
I don't know.
I picked it up. Will I be picking up number two? Probably not. But I don't know. Maybe I will. I don't know. You judge these things too quick.
Yeah, but Mitch,
you are such a Hulk fan. You're nuts.
You will. You know why you will? Because, like I said, it's the pity buy. Mitch is master of the
pity. Please. Let's look at what I bought last week. You ready? I bought my True Believer, Ant-Man and Wasp. It's only $1. It's the origin of the giant man. I love that stuff. $1, you can't go wrong with that, you know?
No, you can't. Those are great. Those are great. All right,
so I also bought Ant-Man and the Wasp, brand new book that came out, number one. There was two Ant-Man books last week, and this is basically a retelling of...
That's going to be the first time in history that's ever happened.
What, that I bought an Ant-Man and Wasp?
No, two Ant-Man books on the shelf.
There was. I didn't know what the difference. One was a 4-part series, and one I think is an ongoing, or maybe it's just tied into the movie. I don't know. And some guys started going nuts because I picked up this book that's got an all-white cover with a little tiny dot that's the Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's like, oh, that's a variant cover. That's worth about $8. I go, says $3.99 on it. Well, if you don't want it, I'll take it. Of course I want it now that he wanted it. I picked up the new Justice League book that came out, number one, by Scott Snyder, Tim Jung. I picked up Captain America 703. Love the cover. I picked up Infinity, number four, Infinity Countdown. That's Marvel's leading into some major change thing. I already mentioned the Dazzler. I mentioned the Immortal Hulk. I picked up The Walking Dead, issue 180. I think it's going to be the last one I buy of that book. I can't stand it anymore.
What? Why, Mitch? Why The Walking Dead?
I'll tell you. I started getting The Walking Dead just before the show came on. Then I started reading all the back issues. And now it's a force of habit. But now that I look at this $4 a month habit for a shitty book that I could care less, and this, no, I'm not buying it anymore. Then I got the Man of Steel number 2 of 6 that's coming out. And then I bought, for some bizarre reason, I bought a Star Wars comic book. Because, I buy it because I can't let it go.
Right. Pity buy.
I bought Batman issue 48. Which has a beautiful cover by Frank Cho, who's coming to Terrificon. I honestly just bought it for the cover. I was like, wow. But it's leading into the Batman marriage, which is happening on issue 50, which comes out on the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah. Isn't Batman marrying Catwoman?
He is marrying Catwoman. So, but I picked it up. Honestly, you can't. I don't know if the book's good or not. I just saw that cover and I said, oh, my God, I got to have that.
Yeah, see, Mitch, once again. I always have to throw this out there. Mitch, half the time, Mitch doesn't even read the issues. He sees them on the shelf. Huh? He thinks he's a little kid, and then he friggin' buys them. That's Mitch. He's talking to his mom right now.
No, my son was here. No, I walk into those comic book shops, and every Wednesday, the smell of the brand new comics just drives me insane. I can't control myself, and I just have to have them. I would buy them all. Just to look at them all. And then I start coming home and looking on Amazon to see if there's any new omnibuses coming out, because I love the omnibuses.
No, but right. But Mitch will buy them, and then he'll just throw them on a pile. And it's like, I haven't got to it.
No. I actually, you know what it was? Like last night, I had time on my hands because I actually finished a lot of the artwork for the website. And everybody was watching video games or E3, and my wife went to bed. I just sat down at like 9:30 on the floor. With my, you know what I got off of a brand new off of eBay? Not brand new. Jim Starlin's The End, of the Marvel Universe, 1 through 6. I just bought all those.
Oh, the one with Thanos and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't buy it when it first came out in 2010.
Yeah, I remember those.
But I picked it up because I just wanted to read it because I like Jim Starlin. He's coming to the show, and I like reading. Lots of times I'll buy a lot of the books from people coming to the show just to read it. Last year we had Stan Sakai, who came to my show because Matt Herring raved about him, and he raved about his book called "With the Bunny with the Samurai Sword." Ujami.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Ugambi. What is it?
Samurai Bunny, right?
Samurai Bunny. I can never pronounce right. Ujami Kazabi. Whatever. Wasabi. I just bought it because Matt said it was great. Now I was going to buy the omnibus and read the whole history. I only picked up one or two on, and I didn't really like it.
Yeah, right. Now Matt Herring is never allowed back at Terrificon again.
No, honestly, because I'm like, hey, man, I flew this guy in based on your recommendation here, and it wasn't that great a story. Well, you're not going to like everything, Johnny.
No, I know. Matt did like that, I, and that's my problem. I don't like anything.
Well, Matty, he loves his war comics, so I don't know. We don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. That's all I know. All I know is Hawkman number 1 comes out this week. And every time I see that, I think of one thing, Roy Thomas, because that's his favorite character. And you know who my least favorite character next to Metamorpho is? Hawkman.
Well, see, I didn't mind Hawkman as much because I thought his face looked good because he looked kind of brooding, you know, like when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love how you said Metamorpho because he's down on that list, man.
Not only did I hate Metamorpho.
Target Rock is another one that I hate.
I hated Metamorpho. My cousin had that record album that had theme songs, and the Metamorpho theme song was on there. I couldn't stand it. My cousin Tommy would get up on his bed and jump up and down and sing the Metamorpho song. Kind of reminds me of you.
What was the Metamorpho song?
Metamorpho, Metamorpho. Look at him turn into a rock. Metamorpho, Metamorpho. He's in your sock. I don't know. But
that's bullshit. That's
a real song.
Oh, that was a Spanish song.
Wait, what I was singing was a Spanish song?
Cucaracha, the cucaracha.
Yeah, no. Metamorpho. I'm looking it up. Yeah. Madam, you know what I was speaking of?
You racist.
Did you shut up? Did you watch Coco, that movie?
What? Chico and the Man? What?
No, Coco, not Chico and the Man. Coco, it was a Disney movie.
Never heard of it.
What do you mean never heard of it? It was like the number one movie last year. Every week there's another number one movie.
Coco?
Yes, Coco. It was on Netflix. Netflix has got Thor Ragnarok, which I watched like 4 times again. I've already seen it, and I own it. But
I never seen
Coco's
it.
Coco's good. It's all about the Day of the Dead, you know, in Mexico, when they honor all the dead people, and this kid's got to, he somehow goes to the underworld or the afterlife, and they got to get him back, and he meets all his dead relatives. It's very bizarre, in a way, with Disney stuff, but you never know. All right, here's the Metamorpho song. Ready? I'm going to turn this up.
Metamorpho, a soldier of fortune, didn't care about fame. Metamorpho, Metamorpho, until fate took a hand.
Oh, who gives a shit? God damn.
God,
man, I don't care. Oh,
you gotta learn the art of like the bit. It's just like you throw in 10 seconds, Mitch, and for some reason you feel you have to go to the end of the song.
It goes on for another minute. It goes on for another minute.
And if you didn't catch yourself, I would have been sitting there listening to that horror show. 10 seconds, man, Mitch, that's all we need.
You know what's also bad? Those shitty albums I bought off of you. Or Rob Bruce. Those
it didn't work, or they were scratched up, or they broke.
Yeah,
home.
Yeah. I come home. It's supposed to be Spider-Man. It's the Sound of Music soundtrack. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's Walt Bruce for you.
No. What happened is there were these die-cut Spider-Man, Captain America in the '60s. There were these little books that came, or a little album, little 45 records, and they tell the story. Not the ones, the Power Records. Those were good. They were based on comic books. But they had like the Kingston Trio or some kind of folk singing group with a guitar, some 60s acid head singing songs about Spider-Man and Captain America. Yeah, he's going to fight for... oh, they're horrible. And I paid like $50 a piece for them, which is even nuttier. And why? Why, man? You know which ones I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, shut up.
But if you got it for Robert Bruce, no matter what, it was a rip. You got ripped off. I don't care.
For a show that was only supposed to be a tight 30 minutes, it's 10 o'clock now. Thank you. Wasting my time. Not only did you waste my time, you wasted the listener's time. And when I say listener, I'm talking about that one guy. Hello, Stu Greenberg. How are you? You are our listener of the day.
Wait, I got a little Stu Greenberg news. Hold on. Because you're involved in this. Remember, okay, Stu's his Facebook got hacked, right? But I talked to Stu. He sent me a private message asking about Stretch Armstrong and stuff. So I answered him because he was looking for like some prices for a friend. But then 2 days later, I get it from like a request from Stu, and I just thought it's him, and I thought maybe his account got shut off or something, and whatever. So I get it, and then all of a sudden I get, hello, how you doing? And I didn't answer him. I'm like, okay, Stu's getting a little too friendly here. Then there was another one about a couple hours later. Hey, how you doing? And then a few hours later, I get all these these question marks. And then I talk to you about it, and I'm like, is Stu okay? I go, he's too affectionate here. And you're saying, I think his account got hacked. And, you know, I just thought, like, Stu was getting too close. So, Stu, if you're listening, I apologize. I was yelling at you. You didn't know I was yelling at you.
No, and I'm telling you, I don't think that's him. So don't send any of those...
No, because I found out it wasn't him because I deleted his account and I noticed that he still had his account. So I got so somebody stole his account.
That was an evil Stewie.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm getting mad at Stewie. He's getting a little too close. He wants
when he started asking you for pictures of your pee-pee, you knew you were in trouble.
No, but I was like, but it wasn't Stu. So Stu, I apologize. I love you. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. All right, can we go home now?
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.